Colleagues, just as a little postscript to that presentation, I really appreciate the note that we still have a ways to go. And we intentionally, when we set up the Office of Equity and Human Rights, we focused to start with on race and disability, and I continue to support that. And we still, the statistics show that we have a long way to go. So recently I met with delegates from the United Nations Convention to Eliminate All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, which is known as CEDAW. There were some international representatives who came to interview me and others. The Convention to Eliminate All Forms of Discrimination Against Women was signed by President Jimmy Carter in 1980. Of the 194 United Nations member nations, 187 have ratified CEDAW. The United States stands with Iran, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, Tonga, and Palau in refusing to ratify this treaty. It remains on the Senate in the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. The Senate has held hearings on CEDAW 5 times in the last 25 years and has somehow not managed to bring it to a vote on the Senate floor. This is just an example of how we in the United States need to live what it says in the Constitution and live the American dream and provide opportunities to all people, all genders, all races. And it's something that I'm going to be investigating. Jasmine Wadsmith, one of my policy advisors, has been looking into what we might be able to do without deflecting attention from the work of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, initially focusing on race and disability, to bring some more attention to the issues of eliminating discrimination against women. So that is pending.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yeah. We'll suspend the rules for that. That's a good idea. Thank you very much. Thanks for your great presentation. So now we'll move back to our regular agenda and take up item 206.
206. Apply for and accept a grant in the amount of $5,000 and appropriate $2,500 for fiscal year 2015-16 from the Oregon Impact 2016 Pedestrian Safety Enforcement Mini-Grant Program for sworn personnel overtime reimbursement.
So Officer Brian Sweeney's here to explain this proposal to us.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners.
Good morning.
This is a third-year repeat for this particular grant from the Oregon Impact. We accepted it in 2013-14, or 14-15, and this will be the third time that we've applied for it. With your permission. What it allows us to do is identify areas in the city where we're having an increase in vehicle crashes relating specifically to the crosswalks and pedestrians. We will pick 5 locations, organize a mission, usually a 4-hour time period around a busy time during the day where there's lots of traffic. And officers will come in on overtime and conduct enforcement at the crosswalk. A lot of the media notifications will be made by the Portland Bureau of Transportation, Sharon White. She's helped us out a lot in the past with this. And I think that about covers it, unless anybody has any questions.
So you coordinate with PBOT, obviously, on figuring out where those particular 5 locations will be each time.
We do, and it's we don't know what they are right now. There's several different ways to identify them. We could work all of the intersections in the city and make an impact. So we try and pick the ones where there's a bigger problem.
Other questions?
So we hear a lot, and we're all aware of the challenges with staffing in the police bureau and the fact that everybody's working a lot of overtime anyway. So certainly this is a great project, which I've supported in the past. I continue to support it. I'm concerned about officers doing even more when we know that we're stretched to just provide patrol services.
Right, and I'm certainly not the one to answer staffing questions. I can tell you just what I know. I'm assigned to the traffic division. A lot of the work that we do is grant-based work, where it's on overtime, so the officers have the ability to say yes or no to it and sign up for it. They don't have to do it if they don't want to. In years past, we've asked for $5,000, and I think last year we were actually awarded the 5. We didn't use it. We have so much going on, like you mentioned, with different events during the summertime, and this is kind of when this is organized. Now till September, we have to spend the money, and we're busy during that period. So The last 2 years, Oregon Impact hasn't had any issues with us not using the entire amount that we were awarded. I'm going to try and structure it this year a little bit differently, and maybe have a few more of these missions during peak travel times with less officers at each mission. So I might be able to spread it out a little bit better and use more of the funds.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any opportunity for using any non-sworn staff to assist in these missions. I don't know what they might be able to do, because obviously you have to have somebody in the car turning the lights on and pulling people over. But I think we'd all be very supportive of you looking to partner with other staff if that's possible.
We do with PBOT. They help us out quite a bit. Sharon White has helped us as the walker, the decoy, I guess is the term that we use for her. She's not able to do it this year. It'll probably be a police officer that's in civilian clothes that's walking across the street, just because of the danger involved with it at some of these crosswalks. So
I'll do it.
Yeah, well, I'll do it too. You know, I've done it in the past.
Seriously.
Yeah, certainly. I appreciate that.
We very much appreciate how stretched you are, and if there's any way that any of the staff in our bureaus or ourselves can help with things that don't require a small officer, a sworn officer, please ask.
I appreciate you volunteering to be a decoy, because I've done that. Commissioner Novick's done it, and it adds to the sort of outsized impact of this relatively small grant. If you've got a famous or notorious person out there as the decoy, it then brings media attention to the event, which then makes people think, "Oh, I might be nabbed in that operation. I better be actually following the law."
Well, so since I'm doing it all the time without having the police officer standing by to grab somebody, then I would be more. It would actually make me feel safer to be the decoy.
It will be safer.
Part of the grant is media notifications that are made through our office, our PIO's office, and PBOT makes their own as well. So, whenever we're out and the lights are on, it usually stops a few hundred people. So,
I'm very good at crossing the street.
Okay, I think you got an eager volunteer for this year.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you.
Mayor, I have to ask you to clarify, which of us do you consider famous and which notorious?
All both. Any other questions for Officer Sweeney? Thank you very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item? If not, then it's an emergency ordinance. Let's take a vote, please.
Thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Thank you. Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Aye.
Hang up, drive, follow the law. Aye. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's take our last few items on the regular agenda, starting with 207.
Update city travel policy.
Good morning. So what are we going to do here?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Michelle Kirby, City Controller and Manager of the BRFS Accounting Division.
And I'm Betsy Ames, Senior Policy Analyst with OMF.
So we are here today with an update of the City's Accounting Administrative Rule, FIN 6.13, Overnight and Out-of-Town Travel. So first I'm going to explain the process we went through to come up with this update. Over the years, OMF has received input about the travel policy and the corresponding procedures, including feedback that the requirements were unclear and/or excessively time-consuming. Therefore, accounting and policy staff have researched best practices across the country and prepared draft changes to FIN 613 and the related procedures. In addition, input and advice from council offices, city travel coordinators, travelers, and bureau accounting staff have been used to develop the draft in review in multiple stages. The initial draft was shared through a citywide notice and review period in December and January. In addition, staff made presentations and additional outreach through the city's accounting advisory committee, the council chiefs of staff, travel coordinators, and a variety of individuals and work groups. All this feedback was used to prepare the final version that we bring to you today. These final documents were shared with interested stakeholders, and last Tuesday we held a very well-attended information session with the Bureau accounting staff and travel coordinators. And now Betsy is going to describe a couple of the more significant changes in the policy.
So some of the significant changes from the current policy to what is before you today is that we have established a new, more expedited risk-based approval process for both pre-travel and post-travel expenses. For pre-travel, which is when a bureau director or a commissioner in charge is approving the expenditure of city funds and evaluating the purpose of the travel and confirming that it's appropriate. We've removed the requirement for the commissioner in charge to approve all travel expenses across the city and instead established a threshold of if it's less than $5,000 and the travel is within the U.S. or Canada, the bureau director has that authority. And then if it's international or above that threshold, that the commissioner in charge is required to also sign off on that approval. In discussing this with various offices, we've been clear that commissioners always retain the ability to set different standards for their own bureaus in terms of wanting to have everything come to them or saying that they want to hear about everything over $2,000 or whatever that might be. For post-travel review of expenses, since this is mostly a administrative and accounting practice to review the documentation, ensure that the amounts that have been spent conform to the amounts that were approved prior to the travel, we've removed the requirement that a bureau director or commissioner in charge needs to review that if it's within a certain threshold. So if someone comes in within 110% of what was pre-approved and there's rationale for that, a bureau accounting staff or operations manager can be authorized to approve that. If it's above, more than 10% above what was approved, that needs to have a written justification and explanation and needs to be approved by either the bureau director or the commissioner in charge, depending on the previous approvals. The second change that is significant is changing how we calculate partial day per diem for meals and incidental expenses. Previously, there were complicated calculations based on what time a traveler departed and questions about whether that was when they departed their home or when they arrived at the airport. We have looked to the federal government's standards where they apply a 75% calculation on the day of departure and the day of return and standardize that across the city. This also allows us to include qualifying day travel as part of the policy. A situation would be where there's a day-long conference, say in Seattle or Vancouver, BC. A bureau and the traveler decide that they can leave very early in the morning and come back late at night, and they're saving the city expenses by not having an overnight stay that was previously required by the current policy, and we can cover that as part of the travel policy. That was something that had come up in feedback over the years. We also have made a change to how the city can purchase airfare. We heard a lot of feedback that there should be an option to pay via Expedia or others using a procurement card. You have to do the comparison of costs, but in addition to having to go through the city travel agent, we're now offering an opportunity for bureaus to procure using a procurement card online through online travel booking services.
Or by themselves? I mean, if you just want to go to Alaska.com, can you do that? Or do you have to go through a travel booking service?
It could be Alaska.com as well. We still expect that there be that comparison of prices to ensure right. that you're getting the lowest cost alternative that meets the business.
You can do that by going to all of the airlines yourself rather than specifically
yes.
using a company to do it.
And it still needs to be purchased with a procurement card or via direct invoice.
Betsy, in terms of lowest cost, I'm pricing out a trip for May to go see my family in Spain, and I found that the lowest cost trip takes about 2 weeks. And I get there, but it's not quite what I was hoping. And I noticed that, you know, obviously the more expensive flights are the direct flights. Do we have a preference in our policies about whether it's the most cost and direct are often correlated? And how do we slice that? Because we also don't want employees to waste a lot of time in airports.
The wording says
we have specific language that addresses that, because the lowest cost for a bureau includes the cost of the time. The cheapest ticket might be that red eye flight, but that leaves someone, you know, attending a conference and not being able to. Things great. So we do have language, and I am sure I can find it if I had a moment, but that talks about the lowest cost.
In other words, our rules don't.
Best value.
We don't penalize people for getting the most direct flight.
No.
Which sometimes is a little more expensive.
It might be a little bit more expensive, but it might allow them to work a half day in the morning before they leave for their trip. So, exactly. And that's where there's discretion, and that's why the Bureau Director is reviewing this and saying, yes, it makes sense to spend an extra $50 because we're getting this extra value by having them here. We very much appreciated all the feedback that we received from the different bureaus. I think almost every bureau had a representative the other day at our meeting. We've had good participation, and it was really useful to have them participate. So we think these changes and others included in the update will help streamline the travel process, saving the city time and money while continuing to ensure adequate internal controls and oversight are in place. So if you have any questions.
Colleagues, I strongly object to removing the commissioner in charge out of the approval loop for decisions less than $5,000. I've served here for 18 years. I've signed off on every travel request on every bureau I've overseen, which is some 10 or 11 bureaus. It's not too burdensome. Given the amount of scrutiny things like travel expenses attract from the media and others, I would request that we remove that provision and put the commissioner in charge, required approval for all travel expenses. And I can't support this otherwise.
So as I understand your recommendation, we have the discretion of delegating under $5,000. It's not required. It's not a required delegation. You're just giving us the discretion to delegate to a bureau director.
The current policy is that all travel must be approved by the commissioner in charge, and the commissioners have the ability to delegate to their bureau directors or to others within their office or within their bureaus, and my understanding is that a number of you have delegated that authority to your bureau directors. So we're basically just flipping it to say that the default is the bureau directors unless the commissioner in charge wants to retain that authority.
So Commissioner Salzman, I was concerned about that too, and I was then reassured by staff telling me that I could have different rules for my bureaus.
Right.
And now that I'm here in the council chambers, it does seem maybe it would be confusing that every time bureaus get reassigned, the rules on travel would change, and they would have to remember to tell our bureaus that. I'm wondering, and I share your concern that $5,000 is a lot of money. I had been thinking of, at the very least, could we add something that requires directors to report semi-annually or something what they've approved? Now that I'm hearing your concern, I'm wondering, is there a number below which you would be okay with? Is it $500 that you'd be okay with the bureau director, or would you prefer to continue approving all of them?
Well, I think, you know, I guess I'd be okay with a $500 threshold, but, you know, what often happens is you have 20 people going to a conference that costs $500 a pop. Pretty soon you're talking real money. And that happens. I mean, I know we send fire folks to conferences, we send housing folks to conferences, so I'd prefer that we keep, you know, if we want a consistent rule, I'd say keep the commissioner in charge in the sign-off loop.
I'd
second
that amendment.
The most fiscal responsible way, and it avoids, I think, you know, embarrassing situations as well, because you have another set of eyes and you have another signature on that travel release.
Yeah, you're seconding that. I hadn't focused on this provision. There were other parts of this that were more important to me. So So we have the authority now to delegate that, even though that's the rule. I mean, it is the rule, but you could say, I give to my bureau directors this authority.
Yes.
So, but the default is the commissioner in charge has to sign.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the discussion.
Why is this an emergency?
It's only an emergency because we didn't want to delay putting it in effect. A lot of bureaus have asked for clarity going forward. It doesn't need to be an emergency.
But if we were to accept Dan's view on this, the status quo is each commissioner can still decide to delegate decisions on a case-by-case basis?
Yes.
Further discussion of the amendment?
Colleagues, I agree with Commissioner Saltzman that the media sensationalizes the issue of public employee travel, but this is sensationalization is generally absurd. No private company of our size would have a rule that the CEO or one of the top five people in management have to sign off on every travel item. I agree that there are times when a number of people go to a conference, the amount seems somewhat large. In fact, Beth Slovic, when she was with the Oregonian, wrote an article that implied that the streets of Portland could be paved with gold if we didn't send people to Railvolution. But I think that we can address that concern by adopting rules ourselves that if our bureaus are sending people to a conference and the total amount of the cost is more than, say, $15,000, then we have to sign off on it. But with that caveat, I think this proposal is perfectly reasonable.
Okay, well, let's
Betsy, just so can I just make sure I understand? So you've got a number of recommendations here that seem sensible and non-controversial. The question that Commissioner Saltzman is raising, at least for today, is whether we stick with the existing policy or we have this new bright line that kind of flips it. And it does seem to me a little bit of six of one, half dozen of the other, since it's still within the commissioner in charge's discretion to make the call. Am I right on that?
Yes. I think.
I think so.
Oh.
If I may just speak to that, though, that would be when a bureau was assigned to a new commissioner, the director would then say, what would you like us to do on travel expenses, rather than assuming that they get to approve them all.
We did split up the pre-travel when we're authorizing how much, authorizing the purpose and the expenditure from the post-travel. So
I don't think you've heard
a
concern about the 110% rule.
Well, the post-travel is yeah.
You know, that 110% could just be that the airlines jacked up the cost of checking your luggage again. So, I mean, I don't think that causes any concern. Okay, so.
So it would just be the pre-travel.
Yeah.
And we can... If it's, I'm getting a sense that the council would like to change that back. We can bring back amended language next week.
Well, we can amend it right now, and then you can bring because it's going to come back for second reading.
I conferred with Betsy to the extent this is an HR policy.
Yeah.
We want to be very particular.
It's an accounting administrative rule.
Okay. Mayor, why don't we
to the extent that it's going into the policy documents and it's going to govern how people are approving expenditures, my recommendation would be that you have staff go back and revise the policy.
Okay.
Because the amendment right now doesn't have any specifics to it, and it would be good to have specific language.
Why don't we
policy.
Just set it over for a week and ask for language, and we keep the emergency on for keep that
option. Should we vote on the amendment, though, or the intent of the amendment to direct staff to go back and change it?
Unless the sense of the council.
I think it's the sense of the majority of the council. If we're not going to take a formal vote on this, that's fine. I think it's the sense of the majority of the council that we do want to keep the status quo with respect to the commissioner in charge and that they can still elect to delegate this. So unless there's any further need to do that formally, let's do set this over and have you bring back a revised version next week.
Okay. Should we take testimony today?
Hmm?
Should we take testimony
Is anyone
today?
Wants to speak on this while we have it? Otherwise, you can speak on it next week when it comes back. So,
any other questions on the policy?
No, I thank you for your good work.
Yeah, it's a good piece of work. So,
great.
Thank you both very much. We'll set this over for 1 week and move on to item 208.
208, authorize a participating agreement with Invoice Cloud, Inc. to provide online utility and tax payment processing services for a not-to-exceed amount of $1,460,000.
Mr. Fish.
Mayor, Director Sturr was such a hit earlier, we asked him to come back for a second appearance. At a time when we hear about financial data breaches far too often, we're very pleased that the Water Bureau, that working with the city, we're taking the necessary steps to protect customer information. Last summer, the Water Bureau discontinued its auto-pay service in order to give us the time to comply with some new banking requirements. And we understand this was an inconvenience to up to as many as 30,000 customers. We've heard from a number of them. We regret the inconvenience, and we're looking forward to being able to put auto-pay back in play. But I do want to just say that since September, Kathy and her team have been working diligently, literally around the clock, to get these fixes in place and to bring us to this day where we're asking your support for a invoice cloud agreement. This agreement before the council is a big step towards bringing back auto pay, as well as a number of other features that our customers have requested. Here to tell us more is Christine Moody, Mike Sturr, and our own Kathy Cook.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. Thank you for the intro, Commissioner. The Water Bureau's Utility Customer Service Group is responsible for bill presentment and credit card processing of the city's water and sewer bill utility bills. As part of the city's PCI compliance and remediation activities, the city is transitioning to a new payment gateway provided by the city's contractor, NIC. NIC's technology does not currently meet the Water Bureau's requirements. Therefore, the Water Bureau intends to utilize Invoice Cloud due to their previous work with the developer of the Water Bureau's billing system. As allowed for in City Code 5.33, the city may participate in an interstate cooperative procurement after posting a public notice of intent to use a cooperative contract. This notice was posted on January 22, 2016, and no responses were received. You have before you an ordinance recommending the authorization of a participating agreement with Invoice Cloud for a not-to-exceed amount of $1,460,000. And I will turn this over to Mike Sturr, Water Bureau Administrator, to discuss more about these services.
Good morning again. Mike Sturr with the Water Bureau. This is an extremely important step in restoring the service that we had to shut off or cut off the functionality because of PCI compliance. Our goal there was to protect our clients' data as best we could. Frankly, Invoice Cloud is the only purveyor that is fully integrated with Kayenta, our billing system. And I thank Christine and her group for finding a creative way to arrive at this contract. There are a lot of folks to thank in this operation. We weren't the only ones that were impacted, just the ones that were impacted probably the largest as an outcome of PCI compliance. Christine, Scott Snyder, and Kathleen Brennis from Purchasing worked out the contracting arrangements for this. Fred Miller and Ken Rust have been very supportive and provided push whenever we needed to make sure that we all stayed on track. Jeff Baer and Christopher Padron from his office was the project manager for this effort. And Ken Rust and Jennifer Cooperman, Ken from the is obviously the CFO and Jennifer runs the Revenue Bureau, were all helpful in making this happen. And last but certainly not least is Julie Shervey, who is the Business Solutions Group and the group that actually operates Kayenta for us. This thing had a huge impact on the Water Bureau, and Kathy and her entire staff and customer service deserve thanks. It made their lives very difficult, still a little bit more difficult, and Kathy will talk about that. And we don't often do this, but I want to thank four people from the commissioner's staff. This was so arduous and so intense in the beginning of this that Paige, Asena, Betsy, and Liam became expert at answering our customers' questions, and so we had a few less calls, I think, because of that. And last but not least, I appreciate the forbearance of our customers. Cutting off auto pay was a big burden. People didn't have to think about it. And we frankly didn't have to think about it either. Now they had to think about it, and the result is increased call volume. So now I'd like to turn this over to Kathy Cook, who's our real customer champion here. I doubt you'd find a more customer-oriented person in the city, and she'll tell you a little bit about what Invoice Cloud will do.
I'm Kathy Cook, the customer service champion. With the changes in the PCI requirements, we lost, as we said, some key functionality and convenience for our customers. With Invoice Cloud, we'll be able to restore the auto-pay program. Over 17% of our customers, or over 32,000 customers, were participating in that. In 2014-15, we collected nearly $50 million through auto-pay. Our customers have been very clear with their dissatisfaction of losing this service, and we would certainly like to remedy that for them. We will also be able to restore the ability to take payments over the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you want to make your payment at 2 a.m. on Sunday, you can certainly do that with Invoice Cloud. The beauty, as Mike said, of Invoice Cloud is that it's fully integrated with Kayenta, our billing system. So the payments that are made through Invoice Cloud will be reflected on the account immediately. So the customers will see it, staff will see it, there will be no questions there. Through the payment system, through the phone, we took over 58,000 payments and nearly $17 million. And that is the ability to just go straight to the phone without talking to somebody. When we lost the ability to have that, those people needed to call and pay over the phone through a representative, and they were stuck doing that between the hours of 8 and 5. That's not what they were used to. That's not what they expect from us. And quite frankly, they deserve better. The loss of those two programs have certainly impacted the call center as well. We used to take 1,000 calls a day and answer 80% of our calls within 60 seconds. Now we are taking more closer to 1,300 to 1,400 calls a day with a hold time of over 5 minutes and no ability to pay after hours if that hold time doesn't suit you while you're during your workday. Having Invoice Cloud will not only restore those two important payment channels, but it'll also improve on what we do now. So currently we do have an e-bill program where if you are willing to not have paper sent to you, you can have an electronic bill. What happens there is that if you don't pay off of that electronic bill on time, the first thing you get is a reminder and a fee for being late. With this new program, it has a lot of flexibility built in. So the customer can decide, hey, I'm getting my e-bill today. I might want a reminder partway through before the bill date. I might want a reminder the day before the bill date. It will give the customers the confidence to know that I don't need that piece of paper in front of me. I will remember. They won't let me be late. Obviously, to go with e-bill is a convenience for the customer. It is a savings for the city, and it's good for the environment. So right now, we only have 9% of our customers signed up for e-bill. We do believe with this more improved, robust system, we will shoot for having a 20% adoption rate. It also offers more payment channels, so we'll be able to have mobile payments. We'll be able to do text payments on your cell phone or your tablet. It can make flexible payment arrangements, set up automatically. It's just many more features than what we offer now for customer convenience. We're excited to bring back the services that our customers expect and deserve, and we're even more excited that we'll be able to do what we do now a lot better.
Mayor, I want to say something about Kathy while she's here, because for all of us who've had a chance to work with her, we know what a gem she is and what a hard job she has. And our current system is just not very nimble. And as people know, the mayor and I are very committed to getting as many people on monthly billing as possible for a lot of reasons, including customer convenience, but also sticker shock. A monthly bill is different than getting a quarterly bill. And our system is just not very adaptable. So she's had to do kind of a workaround. And one of the things that she added was at the end of every e-bill that you get, your monthly e-bill, it actually concludes with Kathy signing off on the note, and it has an electronic signature. And that's because she's accountable. And if someone gets the bill and has a question, they know there's someone they can call. I got an email recently from someone, Mike and I got one, that was highly critical of Kathy for having signed, put her name on this e-bill. And I know that in government, we're often criticized for things we do or don't do. And for some of us, our thickest file is no good deed goes unpunished. But But I thought this one was particularly unfair, and I sent a rather sharp response because I think it's exactly what Kathy is modeling is something that I think we should salute and applaud, which is, you know, frontline workers taking personal responsibility, being accountable to their customers. And I actually like getting a bill from Kathy, signed by Kathy, because it's a real person, and I appreciate her
work.
We
like it when you pay the bill, too.
You've made it a lot easier for me to pay it. So I just want to thank Kathy publicly for the great work that she does for our city.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a question, having done pretty much everything you just described about missing the email and then getting the reminder notice with et cetera. Will the new system have the same password as the Portland Online password, or is it a completely new sign up for something new?
You will no longer have to be linked to the POL system in order to do that. It will have its own single sign-on, but it will be right now part of the problem is in order to link your bill to your POL account, you have to have this little teeny tiny number that only comes on the original bill in order to set the process up.
Yeah.
This one will be a much simpler for customers to use, and it'll use something that's meaningful to you instead of a bill number at the top.
And when will this go into effect?
I'd love to be able to answer that. We need to do our initial kickoff meeting for to create the project plan with Invoice Cloud. So I would have put it in on September 30th if I could have. So we will work very quickly to get it done.
Let me
answer
that.
But are you thinking like 6 months, a year?
Let me answer it because you know we know from these technology things that there's always unforeseen events. They're working hard to launch this by the summertime.
That's the time frame I wanted to know.
And they'll get extra credit if it can be done before the summertime.
But it's not happening next week. And it's not next year, probably.
Right. And there's one, and Commissioner Fritz, there's one other feature that Kathy didn't mention that is going to be particularly, I think, great for older adults. This new system will allow you to send a reminder notice to someone other than yourself. So an older adult that wants to have an adult child or caretaker get that notice as well can actually sign up so that they get the reminder, but someone in their life also gets the reminder. I'm, in fact, thinking of sending my second reminders to Dan Saltzman because he's very attentive to these things, and I know that he'll walk over and tell me to pay my bill.
I'm happy to sign off on expenses, yes.
So how will customers be informed of this new functionality?
One of the beauties of the Invoice Cloud itself is that they have their own marketing department that will help us, and then we will also use our own outreach. I personally will be shouting it from the rooftops because I'm so excited to actually get it back, but we will do several things, bill stuffers, messages on the phone, perhaps direct mail. We haven't put that plan together yet, but any way that we can do it, we're going to get that message out.
But so presumably, whatever way you're currently getting your reminder, there'll be something added onto it to say you can switch to this if you'd like to.
Yeah. And again, we do take over 1,000 calls a day, and that's kind of one of the things that we push when we get there. So,
yeah, I also really appreciate your title of customer services champion. I know you've just been assigned it. That maybe we should have a program that people who are frontline workers who choose to want to be identified as a champion, because I mean, it'd be awful to be said to be a customer service champion and then turn out to be not all that interested, right? So we should perhaps have a program throughout our offices and our bureaus of, if you want to sign up to, yes, this is my thing and this is what I'm going to do and I want to be identified that way.
We are very clear that our customers don't get to choose what utilities they go for, so we make sure that we conduct ourselves in a way that if they could choose, they would still choose us.
Well, I want to thank you because you are the voice in the front line for the city, and you know, a lot of times people might only be calling you, and they wouldn't necessarily call the commissioner's offices on any other topic, so thank you for the work that you do.
Other questions or issues to raise with the team here? Thank you all very much.
Thanks.
Anyone else want to speak on this item? If not, it's an emergency ordinance. Let's take a vote, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish and your staff and Christine Moody and Procurement Services and Kathy Cook and others for your work on this. My staff tell me that the cost of $1.46 million is $190,000 from the current budget, and the remaining $1.26 million in merchant banker fees. So the transactions cover the cost, and it's not a huge additional cost to ratepayers. And so I think the nexus between the people who benefit paying for the service is the correct one. Very pleased to support it. Aye.
Fish.
I really appreciate the work of our Customer Service Bureau, and I can tell you that our team, rather, Kathy has been really upset with the fallout from PCI compliance and has made it very clear that she objected to some of the consequences to our customers of not being able to offer things like auto pay. And she will be working tirelessly to bring this system back online, making sure it works. And we're going to be able to offer things that we've wanted to do for a long time, but technology has gotten in the way. So thanks to my team and thanks to my colleagues. Aye.
Hoffman.
Thank you. Thank you in particular, Kathy, for all the great work you've done for the city and continue to do. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you, Mike, Christine, and Kathy. Aye.
Hale.
Well, I'm enthusiastic about this, both as a city leader and therefore as somebody who's responsible for how we work with our customers, although it really falls to people that are doing the work to build that relationship. So thanks for doing a great job of that. But also as a customer of the Water Bureau, I'm a big fan, not only, as Commissioner Fish noted, of monthly payment, but also of auto pay. Although at the risk of oversharing, I have to say that I have an argument with my wife about this subject. Like Commissioner Saltzman, she sweats the details and is the daughter of an accountant. So we're going to make this tool available. Not all customers might be ready yet to use it, but I'll keep trying. Aye.
We're born on the